In our first segment today, Simin Yahagi talks with Minu Mualem, Professor of Gender and Women's Studies at UC Berkeley. Minu is the author of Between Warrior Brother and Veiled Sister, Islamic Fundamentalism and the Cultural Politics of Patriarchy in Iran. Between Warrior Brother and Veiled Sister challenges the mainstream stereotypical representation of Islam and Muslims. The book considers how the veil intersects with other symbols of national identity and how those symbols are understood or misunderstood in the West. Using magazines, novels, and films, Minu Mualem offers a feminist transnational analysis of contemporary Iranian culture that questions dominant binaries of the modern and traditional, secular and the religious.
This is Simin Yahagi with Women's Magazine. I'm here with Minu Mualem. She is a professor of gender and women's studies at UC Berkeley. She is the author of Between Warrior Brother and Veiled Sister, Islamic Fundamentalism and the Politics of Patriarchy in Iran. She is also the co-editor with Karen Kaplan and Norma Alarcon, titled Between Women and Nation, Nationalism, Transnational Feminism, and the State. I'm so happy to have you here, Minu.
Thank you so much for having me here, Siminjan.
Let's start with the Western idea of Islam. The Western idea of Islam as backward, inferior, when did it start? And how did this idea affect the people in Islamic countries, particular in Iran?
Thank you so much for your question. This is an important question considering the fact that in many Western countries right now, we consider Muslims as backward, barbaric, traditional, and this has been a very important component of Islamophobia and racialization of Muslims at this particular time. However, to understand this idea, one should go back to historically and examine colonial modernity or European modernity, because as it has been argued by many scholars, European modernity cannot be separated from the history of colonialism. Also, it's connected with the expansion of capitalism as well as the new ideas of race. So it is in that context that we can understand the othering of Islam as an important component of Islam in modernity. This idea actually has a lot to do with Western modernity, which is focusing on Christianity. So in that case, that comes into contact with its other, with the question of difference. And the others of Christianity are being depicted as backward, barbaric, primitive, and so on. This actually is true with regard to, let's say, spiritual religious practices of Native Americans, as well as Judaism and Islam. So in the case of Islam, it is important to understand the concept of race, because as you know, the concept of race took particular meanings in the context of modernity, which was supported by the idea of scientific racism or race as something intrinsic to various groups. And race was depicted as color of skin. However, in the case of religion, there is a form of cultural racism that emerges in this context that constructs other religions as being essentially, intrinsically backward, barbaric, and we start to think of them as bringing them into the temporality of a civilized world, Western, secular, Christian world. So in that case, it has also a lot to do with the whole ideas of the West and the rest, right? The West emerges as modern, as developed, as on its path to progress, and the other religious or cultural ideas and traditions need to come to this temporality to be able to be civilized. So a lot of ideas form in that context. In the case of Iran, this takes a particular form. In my book, I argue very extensively that this also was very much constructed through the discourse of Orientalism. Orientalism as it constructed Western discourse, as well as Edward Said argues, the Orient as the oldest place of Western colonialism. A lot of these ideas emerged in the discourse of Orientalism that constructed Islam and Muslims as sexually perverse, barbaric, oppressive towards women, veiled, and so on and so forth. Both otherness and gender were a very important component of this discourse of Orientalism. In the case of Iran, we actually constructed Iran as a country or which was civilized until Iranians started to adopt Islam. So discourse of Orientalism vis-a-vis Persians, Persia emerges as a place that was civilized but became decadent and went downfall after adopting Islam. So as you see, the whole idea of pre-Islamic Persia as civilized and then becoming, going downfall culturally, became very powerful in the discourse of Orientalism and then was borrowed by Iranian modernist elite, and it has been very much impacting modern Iranian discourses of Islamic nationalism and secularism, modernization, and so on.
When, why, and how did this portrait affect Iranian women in particular?
As I have argued very extensively in my book, the whole construction of Persian otherness was in intimate relation with the question of women. And woman's question was related to the whole idea of Persianness. So in this context, we not only talked about Persians as being in specific ways, but also Persian women as being lazy, obsessed with sexuality, veiled, oppressed, and so on. And this discourse is the discourse of Orientalism vis-a-vis Iran and vis-a-vis Persians is in intimate relationship with the construction of women as being also backward, traditional, oppressed, lazy, uneducated, so on and so forth. So there is a particular reference to women in this discourse, as well as in the discourse of Orientalism. Gender is a very important component of the discourse of Orientalism in general, and in the case of Iran in particular.
So in your book, Between Warrior Brother and White Sister, you describe secularism in Iran as a strictly colonial product. Does that put the entire value of secularism in Iran into question?
No, at all. I think what I am saying is that basically when we talk about secularism, most of the time we refer to commonsensical definitions. We actually refer to the idea of secularism in the context of colonial modernity, which was very much defined by the culture of Christianity, right? And in that sense, secularism was supposed to be this universalist, rational discourse. However, it was completely defined by particularism of Christianity. So in that sense, also, we refer to the idea of secularism to always constantly refer to this binary opposition between religion and secular. So secularism becomes the other of religion, and religion becomes the other of secularism. What I believe that religion and culture, it's very hard to separate them from each other. And also, it's important to understand what we mean by religion, what we mean by secular in the context of Iran. Also, if secularism becomes a place where religion is excluded, or we can't really understand religious opening for radical multiplicity or radical pluralism, so then secularism becomes a form of fundamentalism, right? That in the context of Iran, for example, we refer to secularism as the end of religion, right? Not as sensibilities which would create a different, like, multiple understanding of time, multiple understanding of mundane, multiple understanding of sensibilities in our everyday life. So it's just we constantly refer to secularism as the other of religion, as if we know what we mean by religion and what we mean by secularism. This is a problem because, for example, I go back to the question of Orientalism vis-a-vis Iranians and the construction of Iran as civilized and Mohammedanism, as it was referred to Islam in the colonial discourse, as barbaric and so on. So in that context, you see that, first of all, we create unified notion of religion, which goes against the fact that Iranians were practicing Islam and other religions. Then secondly, it even undermined the whole idea of that Islam is practiced very differently in Iran, meaning Shiism, Sunnism, Sufism. So there are all these forms of Islamic practices that cannot be unified. And then also we created this space of religion which is homogenized and unified, and then created a space for the homogenization of religion and of Islam, so which is very problematic because we know that Islam is practiced very differently, it's understood very differently, there is opening in religion. And if secularism is going to suppress openness in religion, then it is a problem, right? Then we are referring to a very limited notion of secular. And if religion suppresses secularism, then again also we are referring to a very limited definition of religions. I think we need careful examination of what we mean by secular in the context of Iran. And we also need to be very, very critical about both secular fundamentalism and religious fundamentalism, meaning two ways of thinking about religion and secular which closes up discourses rather than opening them.
When you talk about secularism in Iran as a form of fundamentalism, how do you define that?
Any ideology which refers to a set of foundational ideas and which is close to interpretation, a mixture, hybridization, and so on, becomes very invested in an absolutist forms of ideology. So in that sense, secular absolutism is not better than religious absolutism. Both of them are absolutism in their own ways. And sometimes these forms of absolutism are based on this common sense, taken for granted ideas of what we mean, which is mostly related to a form of binary thinking, right? I am secular because I am not religious, or I am religious because I am not secular, right? This binary is defining what religion means or what secularism means rather than what we are referring specifically. And I would like to continue the discussion open for spaces of convergence between religion, culture, secularism, and so on. So in that sense, I very much appreciate the strategies Iranian women's movement developed in the context of Islamic Republic. They didn't create a dichotomy between what is religion, what is non-religion, and basically focused on women's issues and so on, and negotiated these issues or continue to negotiate these issues rather than saying what is religion, what is secular, and has been much more productive than what some Iranian feminists or other feminists are asking them to do, that, you know, say if you're religious or you're secular. So I think they avoid it. They continuously went against that tendency. There is a lot of pressure from either some of the Islamic conservative branches that are pushing to define what is secular, right? And they get very scared and very uncomfortable about any hybrid form of secularism and Islam, right? And the same anxiety you see it among secular Iranians, that anything which would have something to do with religion makes them very uncomfortable. So I would be very concerned about not losing the value of secularism, but also continuously being critical of what we mean by that.
Let's talk about what is the meaning of transnational feminism.
Transnational feminism, it's a non-idealized version of feminism. When we talk about transnational feminism, we are not talking about the last version of feminism. Transnational feminism refers to a form of critical intervention in the logic of global imperialist feminism. And also, it refers to the convergences, complicities, alliances among various forms of feminist resistance in different parts of the world. It's also a theoretical framework and also a form of feminist practice that considers, takes relations of power very seriously, both globally and locally, and interrupts the logic of a global imperialist feminism by interrogating what Inderpal Grewal and Karen Kaplan call scattered hegemony, as well as meaning various cultural formations, various modernities, the formation of gender in various parts of the world, as well as how these scattered hegemonies are also linked in a transnational world. So in that sense, transnational feminists are very interested in interrogating power relationships as in a particular location, as well as feminism travels around, right, from one location to another. Also, transnational feminists have been very interested in not only looking at gender, but also bringing gender into conversation with relations of colonialism, nation, with issues of religion, issues of culture, issues of class and race, and very interested in interrogating issues of gender in relation to other forms of social hierarchies.
Why don't you give me a tangible example of transnational feminism and how the transnational feminism in the context of Iran works?
I guess in the context of Iran, what it means is that to pay attention to historical specificities of Iran and specific negotiations that emerge within various gender activists or women's activists in Iran, to understand this specificity vis-a-vis particular notions of Islam or Shia Islam in Iran, as well as the ways in which these movements are connected both regionally and internationally to other movements. Let's say Islamic feminists are engaging with other Muslim feminists in the region, as well as there are various versions of feminism that are being circulated. So I think one should raise a whole lot of questions about relations of power. Who is the other? Who is being objectified in this process? How and in which ways issues of class, issues of ethnicity are being engaged with in these feminist negotiations, and what is being forgotten, suppressed in this process? Also, what modes of resistance are emerging in the context of Iranian society that are specific to that context? And what do we have to learn from that? For example, it seems to me one form of negotiation that is being discussed in the context of Iran is the question of equality versus difference. And that question is being discussed very extensively in Iran. What do we have to learn from that question? How does that question bring into conversation issues of equality with issues of difference? What do we have to learn from Iranian women's experience? So I guess those are a whole lot of questions we can engage with if we were to use a transnational feminist perspective.
How can we apply the lessons from this book to what is happening in Iran today?
I guess What is happening in Iran is very interesting. Islamic nationalism in Iran has come into its limit. It has been negotiated by various groups. So various groups are coming with their own interpretation of Islam, imagination of what an Islamic government means, and so on and so forth. And I think Iranian women's movement have been extremely important in raising questions that are very important, from juridical questions to social questions, cultural questions, and so on. So in that case, instead of constructing Iranian women as oppressed and religiously confined, I think the book helps us to think about women's agency, women's participation, and so on. And also kind of interrogates the ways in which power invests in certain categories, in certain modes of being, in certain forms of a lifestyle or certain forms of fashion, right? The book helps us to understand that veiling is not a fixed entity. Veiling is not the amalgamation of tradition, but it has a lot to do with the invention of tradition, right? How veiling became as part of the civilizing mission discourse in the context of colonial modernity, and how it was reinvented in the context of modernization and westernization as a sign of tradition, as a sign of backwardness. Unveiling, then it was claimed as a site of resistance, as a site of Islamic nationalism, as a site of participation in the community of nation. So it's really, it helps us to understand how power functions and the ways in which power invests in certain categories, certain tropes, certain ideas, certain images. That, fascinatingly enough, has a lot to do with gender issues, right? Why power invests in the idea of a veiled woman, right, has a lot to do with the formation of gender ideas, gender ideologies in Iranian modernity as well as Western modernity.
Thanks so much, Minu, to be with us in Women's Magazine.
Thank you so much for having me here, Simin.
That was Simin Yahagi in conversation with Minu Mualim, professor of gender and women's studies at UC Berkeley. Her book is Between Warrior Brother and Veiled Sister, Islamic Fundamentalism and the Cultural Politics of Patriarchy in Iran. To find out where you can buy the book or get more information about Minu's work, please visit our website, kpfawomensmag.blogspot.com. You're listening to Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM and online at kpfa.org.